Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Governor Cuomo's tax compromise, and forgive my cold, but we press on. Governor Cuomo's tax compromise passed the New York State Senate unanimously, 55-0. Republican leader Dean Skelos.
It's outstanding. Anytime you can cut taxes for the middle class and reestablish a fairness, a code of fairness, and that's what this is all about, fairness. The millionaire's tax as it used to be, which was a 3% surcharge on incomes over $250,000, this indeed is a real millionaire's tax, if you were, but it's about fairness in the tax code. This is for 99.8% of New Yorkers, this is a great deal. They're going to see a tax cut, and that's what we're here for.
It wasn't close in the assembly either.
I've been in the assembly for almost 20 years, and I have seen nothing ever that there's ever been unanimity on. You know, somebody's always going to be upset, but I will tell you this, that I think people are overwhelmingly pleased with the so-called new proposal. You know, we've had some discussions, quote-unquote, with the governor over the last, 10, 11 months of his tenure, and we have always put on the table that we did not want the millionaire's tax to lapse. So I think overwhelmingly people are pleased. You know, if it walks like a duck, talks like a duck, it's a duck.
Democratic Assemblyman Keith Wright of Harlem. Before that, we heard Republican Senate Leader Dean Skelos of Long Island. The vote in the assembly, by the way, was reported as 130-8, 55-0 in the Senate. So is this Albany triumphing over gridlock the way Washington can only dream about? Or if everyone is for it, must there be something fishy going on? Here are two skeptics of the plan. John Petro from the liberal think tank, the Drum Major Institute, walking in the door even as we speak. And E.J. McMahon on the phone from the conservative think tank, the Manhattan Institute. E.J., welcome back.
Thank you. Good morning.
And John, as he sits down, welcome to WNYC. Good morning.
Thanks a lot, Brian.
So for both of you, and EJ, I'll let you start since you don't have to catch your breath. I see the package as a down-the-middle compromise. The expiring tax surcharge on top earners was bringing in $4 billion a year. Liberals wanted it kept. Conservatives wanted it gone. The governor's new rates will retain $2 billion of the $4 billion, exactly half. Is this simply a 50-50 compromise?
To use your analogy, it is a down-the-middle compromise in the sense that would have been the case if Solomon had actually gone ahead and cut the baby in half. What you were left with, of course, is a dead baby. But I quite seriously, what you have here, the core of this is the governor wanting and needing revenue before he finalized his budget and wanting to exploit the political leverage he has over the Senate in particular in advance of an agreement on reapportionment in mid-February. That's what it's all about. The governor wanted revenue. He's changing tack from somebody who closes budget gaps without tax increases to somebody who needed revenue to close part of his budget gap. Pure and simple, that's what this is about, and that's why he pushed for this.
John Petro, a 50-50 compromise, a dead baby, quote-unquote.
Wouldn't call it a dead baby. I would use the word compromise. I think this is a clear indication where you had a strong presence on the left that just grew up recently, the Occupy movement. And I really see this as a rhetorical victory for that movement, where a couple months ago we were talking about the complete elimination of the millionaire's tax, going back to the completely unfair income tax system that we had before those surcharges went into place. I think, you know, when you consider we were about to lose $5 billion in revenue and now looking at it as only losing somewhere around $2 billion in revenue, I think progressives on the left have to kind of say an amen moment there. But at the same time, it kind of illustrates how far we've actually gone from what fairness actually is when you look at the income tax brackets that existed before the income tax surcharge went onto the books. I think we still have a long way to go to actually institute fairness here in New York State when you look at the share of income paid in local and state taxes, not just income taxes, You find that middle-income families routinely pay more of their income in state and local taxes than wealthier families. And, you know, the part of the issue of fairness here is to make sure that that doesn't happen.
EJ, the governor calls this progressive taxation or more progressive taxation. Are the new rates too progressive, in your opinion?
Well, the word progressive actually refers to whether people at the top pay much more than the people at the bottom, not to the height of the rate. After all, if you had a higher rate applied to everybody, you wouldn't have progressivity, after all. New York, in fact, this is a fact, and attested to by analysts on left, right, and center for years. New York actually had, and its permanent tax code still has, prior to 2009, one of the most progressive income taxes in the country, and among the two or three least regressive state and local tax structures in the country. That's just a fact. All this talk about fairness, I'm going to grant something to John's side in this. I think they did win. I think I disagree with the goals of the Occupy movement as he describes them, but they did win a rhetorical victory because you have not just the governor, but the Senate Republican leader talking about this being about fairness, which is, to use a highly scientific term, a crock. Because we had a tax code that, in fact, was already heavily dependent on high-income payers. That's why we've had budget problems. What you've now done, and we'll put aside the economic issue, which I'm sure you want to get into, but you've just made the entire state budget even more dependent than it was, and it was very heavily dependent, on revenue coming from a very small number of high-income taxpayers whose income is volatile and whose lives are portable. That's actually fiscally a dangerous thing to do. It is not going to fix our problems. It's actually going to make them worse in the long run.
Before I get a reaction on that dependence question from John, on the progressivity, EJ, the governor said that before this change, New Yorkers making $20,000 a year were paying the same state income tax rate as New Yorkers making $20 million a year. Untrue?
Untrue.
Because?
Untrue. Well, somebody making $20,000 a year was paying roughly 2.5% of his income in taxes, while someone making $20 million was paying 6.5% of his income in taxes. So that was not true. He's repeated it. Repeating it doesn't make it true. It's not true. We have one of the nation's most progressive tax systems, quite aside from this tax increase. That's a fact. And actually, I think that most serious analysts on the left actually do know that. This has been a rhetorical ruse, this whole claim that somebody making a little pays the same as somebody making a lot. It's not the case.
John?
Well, yeah, he's bringing up a number of issues there about, you know, income tax credits and things of that nature. You know, wealthy households definitely take advantage of different tax credits that are out there. But I think, you know, when you look at the whole tax structure, you know, I know we're talking mostly about the income tax right now, but when we're talking about making the whole tax structure in New York State, New York City more fair, we have to look at not just the state income tax, but there are tons of other taxes that are paid. There's sales tax, local taxes, property taxes, and things of that nature. When you factor all that together, you still find that the middle-income families are paying more of their income as a percentage in taxes than the top 1%. And that's just a fact. Now the reason why we're becoming more dependent on high-income earners here in New York State is, quite frankly, because the high-income earners are making by far and away much more money than they were making in the past.
Now, I would correct that for a minute, okay? Their share of our tax revenue has risen faster than their income. Right now, the highest-earning New Yorkers are making about a third less than they were making 4 years ago. So, in fact, their share of the taxes has risen faster than their share of income, quite aside from that whole issue of their share of income.
I'm not entirely sure about that. I mean, we may be looking at different numbers. It's part of the science that we have here is we look at the numbers in different ways.
I think you're talking about a longer sweep of history, John.
Yes, exactly, too. And I'm not just looking at a shorter period. You know, looking at least over 10 years. And if you look back even 30 years, you see how the income tax structure has changed to where we had a much more progressive system, 30 years ago. And this wasn't just in New York State, but also at the federal level.
But, John, what about that dependence on a relatively few very rich people? You know, Newt Gingrich in his presidential campaign was here the other day. He heard about the Cuomo plan, and he said, if I'm the Florida Chamber of Commerce, I encourage this, meaning wealthy New Yorkers move on down where we don't have this kind of income tax.
Right, and we've seen that trend play out for many decades, and I think that there's some evidence that that's beginning to turn the tide. Now, it's interesting when we begin to compare ourselves to states like Florida, who has the absolute worst economy in the country right now. Someone that grew up in Southwest Florida, Cape Coral, has the absolute worst metropolitan economy in the country, and I know that is a fact. My parents live there. You know, if we want to start comparing ourselves with places like Florida, you know, I think we're going to begin to look very, very good. The state, you know, we hear a lot from the right and, you know, quite frankly, from the Manhattan Institute about how New York State is bad for business, and it's because of this tax structure. That really doesn't play out. I mean, you look at GDP growth per capita in New York over the past 10 years, it's been three times the national average. You look at the jobs per 100 residents in New York State, it's well above the U.S. average. You look at job growth over the past 10 years, outperforming Florida, Arizona, Nevada, really handing it to them. Now, what they are getting is this domestic in-migration that E.J. McMahon pointed out, but I don't think that because some old retirees are moving south for warmer weather means that we have some sort of fundamental problem here in New York State in attracting business. Just look at Facebook. Facebook decided, out of anywhere else, they wanted to be here in New York. The same happened to Google. They opened an office here. You know, it's very difficult for me to understand this idea that New York is bad for business when we constantly outperform most other states.
EJ, one more time on this, then I want to move on to some other aspects.
Well, again, that's a data thing. Actually, long-run data actually confirm what I said about progressivity, but we won't get into that. He's selecting economic performance data in this decade, and yes, the areas that had the housing bubble, which would include Florida, much of the Sun Belt in the West, are by far the worst performing economies since 2007, and over the decade, northeastern states, including New York, for the most part, have done much better than them. New York's economy has also been propped up by the very policies, the too big to fail policy in terms of banks, TARP, the policies that actually help prop up some of the incomes of some of the very same investment bankers that the Occupy Wall Street movement protests against are the reasons why we've had a stronger GDP in the short term than some of those other places. But I'm suggesting, and my argument in general is that what we have here in New York State fiscally at the state and local level, including New York City, is in fact unsustainable. And this policy that was adopted in Albany this week will make it all more unsustainable.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We're talking with two skeptics of the Cuomo tax plan, which passed the legislature in the last day almost unanimously, 55-0. That is unanimous in the state Senate. 130-8 is the reported number in the overnight vote from the state assembly. But my guests, skeptical, are E.J. McMahon from the conservative think tank, the Manhattan Institute, and John Petro from the liberal think tank, the Drum Major Institute. I want to get to the politics. And, John, you know, the state Senate is split almost evenly between Democrats and Republicans, but they did vote for this package unanimously, 55-0. How do you explain it?
I think it's pretty easy to explain. I think, you know, a lot of New York senators come from upstate districts, and when you do the math real quick, you find out upstate you have very few millionaires in their districts, and they have a lot of middle-income families. And so what we're finding is we're creating a benefit for middle-income families while, you know, also cutting taxes for the very richest, not to the extent that we were going to. But it became a very simple political calculation for these people. I mean, they realized that, you know, the number of constituents that have a lot of money in their districts is actually very few. Whereas the people that are struggling day in and day out, working hard, still not being able to make the bills, they make up the vast percentage of their constituency. So I think in some ways it was a no-brainer. And the fact that the MTA payroll tax was kind of thrown out there as a little bit of extra goodies.
For the suburban legislatures, because
right,
that's
exactly
a tax cut in their districts.
Yeah, and it gives them something to go back and talk about. Now, you know, we can be very worried about whether or not the state is actually going to live up to its promises as far as reimbursing the MTA for that lost revenue. But in any case, I think the political calculus for Senate Republicans was pretty clear, and it makes sense.
EJ, how do you explain the unanimous Senate vote?
Well, I think it's probably the way he was explaining it. I think that these upstate Republicans are viewing the through the wrong end of the telescope. I think what they're not understanding is that if there is going to be a negative economic response to higher rates on the highest incomes, they are more vulnerable to the negative impacts than the rest of the state is, because they have weaker, slower-growing economies. The fewer people you have in an income class affected by a tax cut, the more you will suffer if people in that income class decide they don't like it. Actually, in fact, in 2009, after this so-called temporary tax was first enacted, the wealthiest person in upstate New York announced that he was moving to Florida, which was Tom Golisano. So I think that's correct. That's the way they viewed it, but I think they mm-hmm. didn't. I think they viewed it in a short-sighted way.
You're both here as opponents of this, John. It sounds like you're a little warmer to it, although the liberal complaint has been that people making from $300,000 to $2 million actually get a tax cut under the bill compared to the current surcharge.
That's very true. I mean, see, I'm a tepid supporter in the way that the way things were looking a couple months ago were going to be much worse. We were going to talk about losing $5 billion in revenue. And that's much-needed revenue. The state needs that money. And I know that the goal of some is to cut government spending as much as possible and just gut government services. But we see that this actually has a real impact. New York State cut funding for a housing program here in New York City, the Advantage Housing Program. That program had its pluses and its benefits. But the fact of the matter is, this year we now have, because that program has gone away, we have a record number of homeless families on the streets in New York. And I don't think that's a good thing for anybody. I don't think it's a good thing for the people that are suffering hardships. I don't think it's a good thing for the middle-income families that have to worry about their neighborhoods. And I don't think it's a good thing for wealthy people.
EJ, if we accept this as a 50-50 cut the baby in half compromise, would you not rather have this kind of compromise than the gridlock that Washington is in over essentially the same issue?
Oh, I don't think that this is actually as comparable to Washington, first of all, as the governor would make out. Secondly,
it's on the tax rates for the wealthy. That's why I ask it that way.
Oh, yeah, but this is not – I wouldn't say it's 50-50 would be a spending cut, would imply that there had been some spending cuts here, Brian. There haven't been. In fact, this is all about producing more money to increase spending with. So it's if you're looking at the tax code in isolation, it's not even 50-50 in that sense. Basically, what they did was raise taxes over the permanent law levels by $2.6 billion, take $700 million of it up in a helicopter, and sprinkle it on middle-class people. Now, that's about a quarter of it. That's not 50-50.
John, that is true, right? I mean, if the Obama versus Congress situation is the president wants 75% spending cuts to 25% tax increases. This was just a tax plan. And I know Mayor Bloomberg is disappointed because he thought it would include pension reform for New York City workers, and that kind of thing just isn't in here.
Well, we still have a budget deficit coming up in January, and I think that cuts are going to be a part of that plan. I don't see – there are no other sources of revenue on the table. So if you're going to meet that deficit – you're going to have to find a way to cut spending unless you're going to raise additional revenue, which the current millionaire's tax would have done. It would have taken care of that deficit problem. And, it's not like New York State doesn't have any needs. The MTA capital program is $9 billion underfunded. They basically told the MTA to borrow it on their credit card, which is going to mean down the road higher debt payments. We have a transportation program that's not funded. We have a Tappan Zee bridge that we hope will be funded one day, but we really have no clear idea how that's actually going to happen. We have an unemployment crisis where we could be spending money productively from the public sector to create good jobs. I don't see how giving a tax break to wealthy people, which is the way I'm going to term it, when you compare it to the millionaire's tax that was on the books, it really is quite a tax cut over what they were paying last year. I don't see how giving those families a rebate is going to stimulate the economy in the same ways that we could productively use state funds to create the things that New Yorkers want.
Last word, E.J. McMahon, and I wonder if you'd comment on this payroll tax cut, which defunds the MTA by $250 million or more. The governor says he'll make it up. We've heard on the news that transportation advocates are skeptical. What's your take on that?
The governor says he'll make it up as if it's out of his own pocket. I mean, my colleague Nicole Gelinas did a really good op-ed on this today in today's New York Post, and I think that she said is better than I could. This creates a whole different set of problems. You know, to break the sort of gridlock, the intellectual gridlock or the debating gridlock between folks like myself and folks like John, I think we should agree on the following, and I think that this is the reason people on the left are unhappy with this too. I think people on the left who can count understand that you still have a situation that's unsustainable. This does not fix that. This raises a net 1.4 or 1.5 billion in a time when we have a structural budget gap of 3 to 4 billion on the state level and worse ones downstream. If you care about funding for, as you noted, homeless programs, I'm waiting to see somebody in the Occupy movement start caring about funding their homeless programs that I constantly hear being talked about, instead of funding free health insurance for people with gold-plated retirement plans that nobody's touching, because that's the kind of choice you have to make. You can't just keep going back to the well. You can't indefinitely raise the top income tax rate to confiscatory levels, which is basically far beyond even what they just did, which is basically the goal of the Occupy movement. It just won't work.
And listeners, with that structural budget deficit still a reality, the legislature will have to pick up where this emergency session left off in January. We thank E.J. McMahon from the conservative think tank, the Manhattan Institute, and John Petro from the liberal think tank, the Drum Major Institute. Thank you both very much. And listeners, we want to know what you think about the Cuomo tax compromise. Do you like it or do you not like it or somewhere in the middle? Go to our webpage, WNYC.org, and click on Brian Lehrer Show. Coming up next, after many years of protests in the streets, a major development in the Mumia Abu-Jamal case. We'll explain.